Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott.
I was at a wedding where people had had a little too much to drink, and the groom got into a fist fight with his cousin, and the police were called. The fighting went out into the parking lot, and he did not go home with his wife that night.
From the embarrassing to the cataclysmic, we all have wedding stories, and we swap them like stories of schoolyard crushes and where we got that scar.
I have a wedding that I was invited to and I didn't go, and it, to this day, it just makes me so sad that I wasn't there, because it was my great uncle Jack, and he, all his life, has been a professional clown, Robo the Clown. And this is his second marriage, so he had a marriage that didn't work out, and then a few years later he met a woman, and she was also a clown, and they had a clown wedding. They were dressed as clowns, the guy who officiated the wedding was dressed as a clown, and everybody in the audience, including my, at the time, like, 75-year-old grandfather, was dressed as a clown.
So the bride didn't wear white, she wore a rainbow.
Oh, it was multicolored.
Did the entire wedding party arrive in a mini and then all pile out of it?
Oh, man, that would have been good. I don't think they came up with that.
I don't want to say it's a bad wedding, because it was a good wedding, and people will hear this that might have gone to it. It was a medieval wedding. It was straight out of Game of Thrones. So there was a roasted pig on a spit. My mom made me a tunic. I had a recorder that I had in fourth grade from music class that I stuck in my belt. And
was there a falcon there that came down and brought the ring?
That would have been awesome. Or a dragon.
You know what the good thing about a Ren Faire-themed wedding is?
Nothing.
No silverware?
I was going to say it's got to be way cheaper.
I don't know. Some people were in full armor.
I don't have a bad wedding story. I mean, there are sort of...
crazy wedding story?
There are some raging weddings that I've been to through the years. But my best wedding story is actually a sweet wedding story. A wedding... my sister's wedding is where I met my boyfriend. My sister Denise, being a good sister, invited several single dancing partners for me. And so Eric happened to have been one of those dancing partners, and he was a damn good dancer, too.
Swept you right off your feet, Virginia.
He did. And that is what today's show is all about, the matrimonial journey from I do to I don't. So the usher will escort you to the appropriate side of the aisle. Take your seat, because the ceremony is about to begin. Whether disastrous or delightful, everyone loves a wedding, or at the very least, is obliged to attend one. And for the most part, American weddings tend to have the same moving parts: engagement, engagement announcement, engagement party, invitation, engagement ring, white gown, flowers, food, signature drink, gift registry, bridesmaids, bridesmaids' dresses that look good on all of them, groomsmen, groomsmen attire, ceremonial vows, rings, reception, champagne toast, more drinking, cutting of the cake, dancing, bouquet toss. But it was not always this way. In fact, in the early to mid-19th century, weddings were private affairs. Joining me now to provide more insight into the history of American weddings is Carol Wallace, author of many books, including How to Marry an English Lord and All Dressed in White, The Irresistible Rise of the American Wedding. Carol Wallace, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much, Virginia. I'm happy to be talking to you about one of my absolute favorite subjects.
Well, I can tell. As we mentioned, weddings used to be private affairs, but was that for both the upper and lower classes?
Yes, it is. Partly for the lower classes, because there wasn't a lot of wherewithal to be making a big party. But also, in the 19th century, there was one really important factor that people didn't like to take public, which is that if you're talking about weddings, you're talking about sex. Just the idea of this was something that families wanted to really hold close and not expose to other people.
So your book starts in mid-19th century New York City. What would it have been like to attend an upper-crust wedding in the 1840s or 50s?
It would have been interestingly similar to a wedding today, in as much as you would have a bride, most likely in a white dress. You would have her family around her. You would have the groom's family. There would be an officiant, most always a minister of some kind. And after the ceremony, there would be a party with a cake. The big differences would be scale and also privacy. Weddings were normally held at home, often in the nicest room of the house, and there would be a lot less fuss than there is today. Often a wedding could be planned, this is going to be an earth-shaking idea, a wedding could be planned in as little as a couple of weeks. And people who were supposed to be there were simply summoned for often tea, maybe punch, and of course the cake.
How about the wedding reception? When did that become fashionable, along with all of its rituals, the garter belt, the bouquet toss, that kind of thing?
Oh, well, the garter belt and the bouquet toss are much, much later, because to go back to the sex question, which you really cannot get away from, that's really a post-World War II phenomenon. The bouquet toss occurs as early as the turn of the 20th century, but it's not that widespread. Weddings were really pretty buttoned up and quiet until the beginning of the 20th century, and then they sort of gradually become more and more like a party, and the introduction of liquor is a pretty big deal. And in fact, the whole big blossoming of the white wedding as a big party that involves a lot of people doesn't happen until after World War II, and that's when the wedding industry really gets launched.
So why?
Partly because industry explodes then. One of the biggest things, strangely enough, is the enormous growth of mass market dresses, not just wedding dresses, but mass market, all kinds of manufacturing clothes. But it's also a time when our economy was going very strong and a wedding became a status symbol, a big fancy wedding. There's a kind of trickle-down effect because high society girls are getting married. Their weddings are being covered in the newspapers and magazines. So you start to see this pattern of these big society weddings that show up in the media, and everyone starts to do a copycat thing. Mm-hmm. And that's how the white wedding sifts all the way down society.
We're speaking with Carol Wallace about the irresistible rise of the American wedding, as is the subtitle of her book, All Dressed in White. Well, let's look at the other side of the tracks in the mid-19th century. This is before the Industrial Revolution. America is still largely rural. Now, how did a country wedding compare to a big city wedding?
Oh, it was simplicity itself. Very often, a girl would wear her best dress, which very often was black, because one tradition there was no shaking was a black dress for a funeral. And people died. People died a lot in the Victorian era, in the mid-19th century. So every woman would have had a serviceable and relatively fashionable black dress, and she would simply dress it up for her wedding with white lace or perhaps with a little bit of artificial orange blossom. The other strictly immovable issue is the cake. There is always a cake. Hmm. But beyond the officiant and the groom, of course, and the cake and some kind of gesture toward festivity, things could be very simple indeed. You could be married just with your family. You could be married even without your family.
Okay, we're going to catapult forward, Carol, to contemporary weddings. According to the Wedding Report, couples spent an average of $25,200 on weddings in 2013. That is everybody. This is an average. So being wealthy is no longer a prerequisite. Now, how did we get here? Why did families of lower means adopt these expensive traditions?
Part of it is a copycat, for sure. If you look at any of the wedding magazines, there's a lot of showiness. There's the Tiffany box wedding cake. There's the gigantic diamond. There's three dresses. And we're an aspirational society. So very often the standards are set by media figures and a bride thinks, well, this is what I need to have too. That's one point. Point two is the industry is never going to say no. People are always going to want to sell you more stuff. And there's a sense in which once you get on to the wedding merry-go-round, it is really, really tough to get off. Mm. If you say you go to a florist and you say, I need wedding flowers, they are going to just take the ball and run with it. And very often zeros do get added to the prices, not just for florists, but for all kinds of vendors. So there's a kind of, it's a consumerist thing, and it's an aspirational thing, and it's also that I think it's hard to carve out options. In many cases, it's just easier to say yes and go with it.
You write in your book about some of the kind of traditions that we have been sold, you know, that we're told that these are things you must do at a wedding. What are some examples of those things that really never existed?
Okay, for example, the engagement ring itself is, it's a kind of jewelry lobby sort of thing. I mean, I don't even want to get started on the diamond industry, but there's a moment in the 1920s to 30s when the formal wedding starts to become more available to, let's say, the middle class. And there are all these etiquette hurdles having to do with, for example, what a proper invitation should look like or what a wedding gift ought to be. Wedding presents were not necessarily as elaborate as they are now when the whole wedding thing started. And it turned out that the sources for information about what a wedding ought to look like turned out to be the stores themselves. Department stores sort of got in on the act and started offering wedding lists, marriage lists, wedding registries, and they would offer the possibility of having your invitations engraved, and you would have wedding planners who, when the position of the wedding planner was invented, it was in the department stores. So in a way, a lot of these sort of landmarks like the shower or like...
Or the two-month salary on an engagement ring.
Oh, my gosh. The two-month salary on the engagement ring. 2 months, yes, exactly. Or when I married, there was a thing where in your parents' house, your wedding presents would be on display. And there were people who made their livings setting up that wedding present display, which is kind of amazing. That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
Well, let's hope not. And for guests, a new American Express study found that the average cost to attend a wedding is surging to $592, not including a gift, up to 75% from just 2 years ago. Do you think at some point, you know, people are just going to say, enough, we're not going to do this anymore? Are you seeing people bucking the whole matrimonial industrial complex, for lack of a better word?
I have been waiting for this to happen, Virginia, honestly, and it hasn't yet. I really do not know why. Perhaps because it is so much harder to go it alone than simply to buckle under and do what you're told by, as you call it, the wedding industrial complex. But surely there has to be an end to this somewhere.
Carol Wallace, a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks so much, Virginia. I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Carol Wallace, author of several books, including How to Marry an English Lord and All Dressed in White, The Irresistible Rise of the American Wedding. To see photographs of 19th century frontier weddings and brides wearing black, visit our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Now, if you'd like to avoid all the hoopla and shelling out big bucks for your wedding day, you can always head to Vegas and elope. But before there was Vegas, there was Elkton, Maryland. Word of Mouth visits the former quickie wedding capital after the break.